my cheese lovers. It is a Wednesday episode of The Big Show. It's Afternoons Live with Dave and John right here on KFIV 1360 AM Modesto, KWSX 1280 AM Stockton, everywhere via iHeartRadio. It's an exciting day today. We're having a lot of fun in here. John, you should come over here during the breaks because we're having a whale of a time.
Okay. Do you know what I just discovered, by the way? Just for those not in the know, the Sony MDR-V6 is quite possibly the greatest headphones that you can buy. Super on sale right now at Amazon.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, they're like $50.
That would have been nice to know at the start of the show, because I think we're down to like one set of extra headphones in here that actually work.
These are the good ones. These are the high-test ones that you would not want to leave out for our coworkers to steal.
You want to name names or...
Nope.
That's not that. You want to join us this afternoon, 565-DAVE is the telephone number. It's also the text machine number. Talking with Frank Snyder and Larry Bush, a couple of Navy veterans from slightly different eras. Frank is a World War II veteran, and Larry a Cold War/Vietnam era veteran. Plus, I just found out he did some stuff after he was in the service, too, that we might want to delve into as well. Some places he went after he was out of the service we might get into a little bit. And other than that, we're just kind of having fun. Giants and Nationals are tied 1-1 in the 10th, so there you go. A loqui conizio, stand up, tell those who oppose liberty, don't tread on me. All right, let's get back to what we were doing. Frank, I want to start with you. Here's what I want to do. I want to start this segment with. I want to talk about your ships. I want you to tell me the story of your ships, and we'll start with you, Frank. The USS Hancock. CV-19, Carrier 19.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about her.
Well, first off, CV stands for heavier than aircraft carrier. Mm-hmm. And people say, well, what do you mean? Aren't they lighter than air? No. Lighter than air was the blimps.
Right.
The big gas bags.
So we're talking about airplanes here.
Yeah. So anyhow, we carried heavier than aircraft.
Right.
That's what the CV means.
Okay.
Now, we were built in Four River Shipyard, belongs to Bethlehem Steel Company.
That's in Massachusetts?
Yeah, just upriver from Boston. And they floated her down when she was ready. They floated her down to Boston, and she was finished and commissioned in South Boston. And I'm a plank owner in that I was part of the original crew that commissioned the ship in 1944, and I don't know, something like May or March or something like March or April, May. I forget what month, but in the spring.
Okay.
In Boston. And when we had a full crew aboard and the Navy had accepted it from the contractor as being ready to go to sea, we took it down to Chesapeake first, did our gunnery trials down in Chesapeake, and then from there we went on down to the Gulf of Paria, which is between Venezuela and Trinidad.
Mm-hmm.
Made Liberty in Trinidad.
Which is where you saw your first coconut.
That's where I saw my first coconut.
And you paid a guy a shilling to...
Paid a guy a shilling to knock all the coconuts out of that one tree.
And John, listen to this. How did he get them open?
He would hold them between his feet and take a machete to them. And that'd peel the bark off. And sometimes it'd open the whole coconut up.
Right.
When it did that, you lost all the juice.
Which is what you don't want to do.
No, the best way was to poke the eyes out that had drained the juice.
Right.
And then he'd take the machete and break them open anyway.
John just bought a machete so he could open coconuts.
Well, I bought a coconut so I could use the machete.
Pretty good with that machete, too, to keep all your toes.
Yeah. So after workups.
Well, anyhow, after the shakedown, we went back to Boston, and the contractor had to make all the changes that the Navy said needed to be done. And then we were accepted, and we sailed with CAG 7 on board. CAG 7, Carrier Air Group 7.
Right. Which would have been originally, seven would have been originally Wasps, right? The original Wasps, that would have been her original air group.
No, that was the ship's number.
Right.
We had a, this is a squadron
right.
number.
Okay.
Air group, carrier air group.
Right.
Seven.
Okay.
And it was about 100 aircraft, more or less. I forget mm-hmm. exactly.
And that's broken down between fighters.
Fighters, dive bombers, and torpedo bombers.
So what are we talking about here? In 44, we're talking about F-6Fs.
Yeah, F-6Fs, SB-2Cs.
Mm-hmm. Which are not the Dauntless.
TBMs.
Right, that's the Hell Diver.
Now, the difference between a TBM and a TBF is that the TBF was designed and made by Grumman,
mm-hmm.
and the TBM was the same airplane built by General Motors.
Right, under license.
Yeah.
And the importance of that airplane, of course, is that's what George Herbert Walker Bush was flying
yes.
when he was shot down and rescued.
Yeah, George yeah. H. Bush. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So that's what you've got on board.
Yeah.
And
so then we sailed down to Panama and through the ditch,
mm-hmm.
which is an experiment in itself, and back up to San Diego. And we actually got to spend a whole week in San Diego. And then we went on from there to Hawaii and from Hawaii on out to the Western Pacific.
So let me ask you this. What was it like going into Pearl Harbor in 1944? I know what it's like going in the 80s and 90s.
Well,
what was it like then? What did it look like then? Because they didn't have the memorial to the Arizona at that point.
Well, what we did, we sailed up the channel around Ford Island, and which lies in the middle of Pearl Harbor.
I know it well.
And we saw the Arizona, the Utah, and the Oklahoma laying there still leaking oil.
Right. Oh, look, somebody brought us cupcakes.
Cupcakes from the cupcake lady.
they were laying there still leaking oil. No attempt at salvage.
Right. Okay.
And I don't know how they are yet, but...
Arizona's still there and Utah is still there. Oklahoma's gone.
Oklahoma's gone.
Right.
But the Arizona and the Utah and the Oklahoma were there. And
how'd that make you feel, seeing those pulling in there? Because that would have been probably the first time you'd seen that.
Yeah, well, first time I'd seen battle damage.
What? How did you feel? I mean, what'd that make you think?
Made me think, God, I was glad it was them instead of me.
And yet, you're getting ready to go in harm's way, aren't you?
You better believe it. And we had vengeance in mind.
Hmm.
I mean, we actually did have vengeance in mind. Because the whole attack on Pearl Harbor, which was a sneak attack, inflamed the United States. I mean, people that were politicians that had made their life work on pacifism suddenly became war hawks.
Hmm.
It changed the whole country that much.
I would imagine it would. And you would have been about, 16 at the time of that, 15 or 16?
No.
When that happened?
No, I was 17.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
And so you heard all this happen on the air because they didn't have CNN back then. So you heard all this on the radio, read it in the newspapers.
Right.
You end up in the Navy, and now you're looking at that. Is there anything in the back of your mind saying where we're getting ready to go is really dangerous?
No. We knew that we were sure service. We considered ourselves at risk.
Okay.
I think that was universal amongst us.
All right. Talking with Frank Snyder, Larry Bush, a couple of Navy veterans. Frank, obviously, from the Second World War. We'll get to Larry's story here in just a little. Larry and I actually have a connection. I don't know. Larry and I's story, where his story starts, kind of where my story picks up in there. So we'll get those connections. But we're not done with the Hancock yet. So, Frank, hang on.
Okay.
Because we got to come back to some of that as well. It's quarter after. 565-DAVE, 565-3283. Stay with us. Back after this. Soul Finger! Every time I hear this song, you know what I think of, right?
No!
Spies Like Us.
Oh, okay.
Thorfinger! They're dancing around the nuclear missile. Welcome back, my friends. It is Afternoons Live, KFIV, KWSX, iHeartRadio. Frank and Larry are here. They're a couple of Navy veterans. We're talking with them about the history of their ships. Larry, don't worry. We're going to get to you. We got a lot of show left here, but I'm At the moment, I'm talking to Frank about the USS Hancock. And, well, actually, let's throw this question out to both of you. Texter wants to, here's the question. How long does it take not to feel like a newbie on your ship? So when you get to your first ship, how long does it take before you feel like you're part of things?
Till chow time.
Perfect answer. How long?
Probably 6 months on the old nuclear or non-nuclear submarines, the diesel electric. You were a newbie until you got qualified.
Right. Yep. Until you got a pair of these things, you're a nub, a non-qualified, useless body. Unless you get qualified a watch, at least get qualified a watch station. If you're not going to qualify ships, at least get qualified standing a watch, because otherwise we're going to put you in the galley and you can wash dishes and empty trash, which actually turns out to be a very dangerous job because you get to use the trash disposal unit, which is directly exposed to seawater, and that creates problems. Anyway, that's another story for another day. So, all right, there's your answers. If you're on a carrier, it's till mealtime. If you're on a submarine, it's until you get your dolphins. Make sense? All right. Frank, let's go back to you real quick. So we're in Pearl Harbor aboard USS Hancock. It's mid-1944 by this point, I would think.
Yeah.
Where's the next place? Where do you go from there?
We went to Ulithi Atoll, which was just newly taken from the Japs at the time. It's in the Caroline Islands.
Right.
And we went in there and joined Halsey's Third Fleet. Let's let the record show I sailed with Halsey.
It's a point of pride for you guys, isn't it?
Yeah.
It really is. And it's there's something about that guy, too.
Yeah.
Now, you never did you ever see him?
Just at a distance.
All right. But you did see another admiral.
Pardon?
You did see another admiral, though.
Oh, yeah. We had a couple of times we had flag on board.
Mm-hmm.
We had Admiral Bogan's flag at one time, and we had Admiral McCain's flag at one time.
Now, people, if you're not keeping up here, you all know Senator John McCain. Former naval officer, senator from Arizona. His father, also a...
No.
His grandfather. You're correct. Grandfather, a World War II admiral, and fairly significant one, too.
Yeah, he was vice admiral, 3 stars.
And he came aboard your ship.
He had his flag on us for several months.
What was that like, being a flagship?
Well, we were flagship most of the time. We had Bogan before him. McGann was a rear admiral.
Right.
And then we had McCain. And then after McCain, I don't remember. We may have had another flag. I don't remember.
Well, it was the importance of that is that that's where the admiral is basing all of his operations, as he controls his task group or his fleet, whichever it might be. Ulithi, of course, the forward operating base for Third Fleet.
Yeah.
Under Halsey.
Yeah.
We're getting ready to, in mid-1944, we're getting ready to start our assault on the Marianas, as well as the Philippines. And going from there. So where do you go from there? What happens next?
Well, our first sortie out from Ulithi, we hit Okinawa first. First time that a white man had flown over the island. And so we caused major damage there and went down a little bit and struck Formosa. And then we came down a little more and started fires in the Philippines. And that was pretty much our plan of battle action until the Philippines were secured, or at least until after Leyte was secured.
Right.
The only time I made liberty in the Philippines was on Leyte at, I don't think the name of the town. But anyhow, it was.
So as you're doing all of this, do you ever see the enemy? Do you ever see the Japanese at this point?
Yeah. Usually through a gun sight. Yeah, they flew aircraft at us all the time. Mm-hmm. Eventually kamikazes. And I saw one Jap in a kamikaze. He bailed out, and our 20-millimeter gunners aft didn't like the way he looked in his parachute, and so they shot him out of it. So, and that made Halsey very angry. He says, this was our one chance to take a prisoner, and you shot him.
Now, you found yourself, Hancock, is, as you're seeing all this happen, but you found yourself near or around USS Bunker Hill at some point, too.
Oh, yeah, we sailed with the Bunker Hill.
Now,
there were 15 ships in the Essex class, and we sailed with all of them at one time or another.
Right.
And usually there were two or three Essex class and an Independence class to make up a group.
Which makes a fairly heavy air power group there.
Yeah. And you know, you take three Essex class and an Independence class, and they've got 350 or so airplanes. They're a formidable force.
I would imagine they were.
And then that was just one group.
Right.
That wasn't the whole task force.
No. And then you've got battleships and cruisers and destroyers and everything around you and all this. The Bunker Hill, I bring this up because you were mentioning this the other day when we were talking. Bunker Hill is an interesting story in the Navy in the sense that she was hit by a couple of bombs and a kamikaze, as I recall. It may have been the other way around. But she was badly damaged.
The worst damaged one was a Franklin.
Franklin took the worst damage, yeah.
Yeah, Franklin took the worst damage of any of them.
And you were right there.
Yeah, we were 300-400 yards from her when she was hit.
What was that like watching her burn and knowing that nobody knew for sure if she was going to make it?
Well, we didn't have much time to do any thinking because we lay between her and Japan. We were positioned there on purpose. It was us and the Enterprise, and I believe it was the Lexington, the North Carolina, and the Boston, rest of them. And they put us in between the Franklin and Japan. And to get to Franklin to try to finish her off, they had to fly over us. And that was a deadly proposition.
Kept her safe.
Yeah. We and the Lexington flew fighter patrols caps all day, and the Enterprise flew them all night. So they had no time at any time did they ever have a clear shot at the Franklin again.
Wow. And she made it home.
She made it
all the way back to Brooklyn, was eventually put back in back into service as a helicopter carrier later on after the war.
No, she wasn't. Yeah. No, not to best of my knowledge.
It was. It sounds like it was an interesting time for you, though.
It was interesting, I'll say. Yeah, I'll say that. It was interesting.
So what? When all this is said and done, when do you leave the Hancock?
Pardon?
When do you leave the Hancock? When do you transfer off of her?
Oh, in San Diego in December 1945.
So you stayed on her through the war?
Yeah.
Okay. And was that the end of your naval service? Did you leave then, or?
Well, I left in February, I think it was, following February.
Ever talk to the people that you served with? Ever get a hold of those folks? Ever go to the reunion?
Oh, yeah. I've been to a couple of reunions. I remember the first one I went to was in New Orleans. And I remember my wife and I, we walked into this room in the hotel. There was about 200 people in there. And I looked around to see if somebody I knew, and I spotted a guy. I walked up to him, and I says, Larry Vines, by God. He looked at me, and he says, by God, that's me. And he says, I can't remember your name, but he says, I know who you are. He says, you're the man that took me to sick bay the day I got my hand shot off.
Oh, now you got to tell me that. What happened?
Well, that's just what had happened. He had lost a hand. He'd stuck it into a propeller. What he was doing, he was tying down an airplane, the tail of an airplane, and he reached back. He was under the tail, and he reached back to hook the line into a pad eye. And just when he did that, the airplane that was being parked behind hit the brakes, and the propeller tipped down into his wrist. and he lost his hand there.
And you took him to sick bay?
I took him
to sick bay. And he remembers that all those years later?
His hand was still hanging on by just a thread. We had so many casualties that day. The sick bay was full, overflowed into chief's quarters. Chief's quarters was just about full.
Right. Now, did you take a hit or something, or was it just accidents and that sort of thing?
No, we took a hit that day. Okay. Well, let's take it back. We didn't take a hit. We took a hit from Torpedo Squadron 7.
That would be your own people.
Our own people. It was accidental. He came back in. He had flown over to Formosa with 400 or 500s in the bomb bay. And only three of them came out.
Uh-oh.
And he didn't knew he had the fourth one right in there. And he was trying to jiggle it out, and he couldn't do it. And then he requested permission to make a water landing, which, of course, loses the airplane.
Right.
And permission was denied. So he came in to make a landing. When he landed, the bomb jarred loose, fell down against the bomb bay doors, which gradually opened, and he came out. The bomb rolled out right there abreast of the island structure. And we had about 50 dead and about 300-400 wounded.
Did you know any of them?
Oh, a lot of them, yeah.
Ever think back to that day? What did you think of that when that, how did that feel?
Oh, my thoughts ran to the Admiral Bogan that had given the order, you will land aboard 19. You will land aboard.
You think he ever thought twice about that again?
I don't know what he thought.
Interesting and fascinating. Frank Snyder's here. He's a veteran of USS Hancock throughout Second World War. Larry Bush is also here. We got to talk to him about his ship. If you want to join us, 565-DAVE, 565-3283. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Afternoons Live, KFIV, KWSX, iHeartRadio. It's a Wednesday. Talking with veterans today. It's Frank Snyder, Larry Bush, and Frank has just told us some fascinating stuff about his story. But take a little time. Let's shift gears here a little bit. Let's go over here to Larry, who's Larry Bush is joining us this afternoon. Larry, again, a kindred spirit. He's a fellow submariner, although from a different era. You were aboard. You tell me a little bit about your ship.
I was on the first submarine I went on was the USS Menhaden. It was stationed in San Diego. It was built during World War II, and when they launched it, right after they launched it, it became the flagship for five-star, well, he was, I think it was five-star admiral then, Admiral Nimitz, Chester Nimitz. He was a pretty awesome guy. He wasn't very tall. He was only about 5'5 or 5'6, but he had a whole chest full of medals.
Also a former submariner himself.
Former submariner. He came when he finally retired up in San Francisco. We were tied up on the pier, and I was on duty that day, and one of the guys that was on duty, and he came down to and visited the ship, one of the last ships he visited. Before he completed retirement.
And of course, being his flagship, which is kind of unusual. I mean, he's the commander-in-chief, SINCPAC. I mean, he's the guy in charge of the entire Navy effort in the Pacific War. He's a five-star admiral, and he picks a submarine as his flagship. That's a little unusual. Most admirals seem to like carriers or battleships or the big men. He liked the boats.
He liked submarines.
He was a good guy from that aspect of it. So you... You join the Navy, you end up in submarine school, New London, Connecticut.
Yes, and almost froze to death up there, being a California boy.
When were you there? Because I was in there in December and January, and I was from Colorado and Utah, and I almost froze to death. I don't think there's any place colder in the world than New London, Connecticut.
I got there in December of 1957, and that just happened to be the coldest winter in years, and then I just about froze to death. There was one time three of us were out at the front of the gate that people that brought us back to the gate, couldn't get the car onto the base because they didn't have insurance, and besides that, the roads weren't plowed, and nothing was running because it had been snowing, and there was no buses, and we had to walk, and the gate was about 2 miles, mm-hmm. I think, or 3 miles into
it's
the
ways.
To the next place from where there was any heat, and that was the next guard shack, which had a Marine in it, and it was just about big enough for one Marine, and there was three of us and the Marine standing in there trying to keep freezing to death because the temperature was, you know, way below freezing, way below zero. The wind was coming right off the river. My gosh, that was cold.
So John, this thing, all right, so it's December to start with. The base is up kind of on a hill that's on a bluff that goes down to the river, which is frozen.
Okay.
And I don't know if they had this when you were there, but when I was there, they had the damage control trainer, which is a simulated submarine. It's a building, but it's built like a submarine. They had this thing. And so they teach you how to fight flooding and stuff, and it looks just like you're inside a submarine.
Sure.
But they pump the water that they use to flood the simulated submarine right out of the river.
So it's freezing cold.
Basically 26, 27 degrees, and you're in there doing that stuff.
It was fun.
Then you do the escape trainer, the escape tower, and that was... You know, I was one of the last people to do that. They've done away with that now. They don't make these kids today do the escape training.
We had to do a 50-foot and then 200-foot escapes, simulated escapes.
Fun stuff, huh?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Watch the expression
on everybody's face when that water came into the tank, the little room down there.
So you end up as an electrician's mate. You go to the Menhaden, and you go through your ship's quals. Takes you about, 8 months, 9 months?
At first, I was a little disappointed, and I didn't do anything, no qualifications for about 5 months. And then I...
Whoa!
I finally got through.
Do I dare say the word?
Yeah, I was... They were going to... As soon as my 7 months were up, I was transferred. They had already filled out the paperwork and were trying to get me to sign it. But I finished all my quals in just a couple months. And
what were you disappointed about?
I don't know. I was just unhappy. I was being treated like a new guy, and I thought I should be treated better.
Okay. We all think that at some point, don't we?
Yeah, but then I finally got in with the swing of things, and I probably became the best qualified guy on the submarine after that.
It gets in your blood, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And you eat, drink, and sleep that stuff.
One time I had a bunk that was right underneath a manual, or it was a hydraulically operated valve, but on a hand dive, you had to get up there and open it by hand. You had to take it out of hydraulic and put it into manual and then turn the valve by yourself. Well, normally it takes two guys, but my bunk was right under it, and we had a hand dive, and I was asleep, sound asleep. I jumped up and grabbed hold of the valve, switched it into hand, and had my feet between my feet and my hands, and I opened that valve by myself, and I was still asleep.
No, I believe it. It's amazing that how it gets into your brain and you just automatically respond to stuff.
You just know what to do.
Yeah.
There was one time we were on a war patrol, they call them, up off the Petropavlovsk, mm-hmm. northern Russia, Siberia, and it was really, the water was like 29 degrees. So we had to have some guys go on deck. 13 guys went on deck to try to fix this thing that was making noise. It was damage caused by the Russians. They had been chunking hand grenades at us. And so they had to go up and fix the deck.
Don't read that in the history books, do you, people?
To keep it from making noise so they couldn't find us anymore. And the guys went on deck. They were counted. And they were supposed to be counted when they came back. They all had life jackets, which had a little one-cell light in it. And there was an officer accompanying, and the chief of the boat was up there. And anyway, they all came back down below, but at the same time, they came into the conning tower, and the guy that was steering the boat was standing there, and his relief was standing there. So there was an extra guy. So 12 guys came down, and the guy that was doing the counting counted 13 people because he counted out the two guys, or one of the guys that was running the helm, as one of the 13. So they shut the hatch, and he said, everybody's aboard. So the conning officer dove the ship. Well, we get going down, and once you're going down, you're gonna submerge. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, we hear this noise coming over the 7MC, which is supposed to be turned off for a dive, but the guy who was supposed to turn it off
still
forgot to turn it off, and he left it on. So the officer was the last guy, and he was up there saying, help, I'm on the bridge, don't dive, man overboard.
What do you do at that point? Just blow, emergency blow and stay up?
Yeah, it was emergency surface and back down. I was in the maneuvering room, as a matter of fact, and they said, and on an emergency surface, you're supposed to go into emergency reversal, but that means going into series battery, and it sometimes you can lose power when you do that.
Right.
And I had heard that the guy calling, you know, because we had a 7MC also, and I'd heard him call that there was man overboard, so I didn't want to go into emergency and risk losing the power.
Mm-hmm.
So I left it in just full back, full reverse. And they asked me why, you know, the conning officer said, why don't you go into emergency? And I says, I don't want to. When I'm running or any of the electricians, they're the main senior controlman, they have control of the maneuvering room. It doesn't make any difference what the captain says or anybody else until they come back and relieve you and say, I'm relieving you, you're finished.
Mm-hmm.
While you're there, you're the one that's in charge. So I didn't want to go into emergency, so I didn't.
And it was the right move.
It was the right move because the guy that was with me was a new guy. He was being trained by me. So I left it in full, and we surfaced, and the backwash of the propellers actually kept the guy right even with the ship. We surfaced. Guys immediately rushed up topside. They had a throwing line. They could see his light out there, and they threw the line, and it just took just a matter of seconds from the time they got there. They threw the line. It went right over the guy's head. He wasn't able to feel it. He feel his hands anymore, mm-hmm. but he put his arm over the line, and then they were able to pull him up to the ship.
Wow. And literally seconds in 29-degree water is about what you have. So it's interesting stuff. It's Afternoons Live, KFIV, KWSX, everywhere, very iHeartRadio, talking with Larry and Frank about their adventures in the Navy. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Afternoons Live, KFIV, KWSX, iHeartRadio, Wednesday.
Aquarius.
Talking with Frank and Larry, a couple of Navy vets. And what I should be doing, John, is running the recorder during the breaks. Yeah, because that's when the good stories are coming. If you got a question for either of these guys, 565-DAVE, 565-3283. Let's get back to Larry here for just a second. You mentioned something there that I knew about because we know about these things, but I don't think a lot of people knew that the Cold War was really a little bit hotter than people want to admit. Well, they were throwing grenades at you.
Well, they were throwing more than that sometimes.
Yeah.
They damaged, one time when I was on the Menhaden actually only had three diesel, you know, 2,000 horsepower diesel electric. And we had to take, we were supposed to come into port for, like a month in the Yokosuka, Japan. And we had to load up food in 5 days and take the place of the submarine that had been up north that they had been so heavily hand grenaded that it had damaged the blown big chunks out of the wooden decking and damaged their sail and radar and periscope.
Right.
So they had to come back to port, and when they did, we didn't even know it because they had radio silence until they got back in, and then we had to go take their place in 5 days. So we were just loading constantly for the whole 5 days. But then we get out to sea, and the first thing that happens is somebody stepped on one of the Freon lines for our refrigeration system. So we had to eat all the steak and everything we could within the next 12 hours because then everything had to go over the side. So then we get up there on station. We're eating canned food and packaged food, and that's all we had. And when it gets down close to the end, we were in rough weather. It was in wintertime, and they accidentally, one of the engines, our captain in his wisdom decided that we should be cleaning all the time. So
I know that captain.
One of the engine men, and we were snorkeling, and he had a cleaning rag out, and he laid it on top of the engine blower, which runs at about 16,000 RPM and has clearances of about two millimeters. Anyway, when it sucked that rag in through a little one-inch hole, it got into that blower, end of blower. So then,
this is all up in the off Russia and the Cold War. Hang on to those thoughts because we got to take a little break here. But this sounds like it's a little bit more than just us and them staring at each other.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was a little bit more than that, folks. Back in 60 seconds. Welcome back. Afternoons Live, KFIV, KWSX, iHeartRadio. It's Wednesday, which I'm thinking, John, we should just turn into Veterans Day from this point forward and just talk to veterans on Wednesdays.
Fair enough.
No, I'm really thinking we should just do that. I'm fascinated by this stuff. And it's very enjoyable in here, and we're getting some great stories and some great great stuff that we've not heard before. And that was my intention and my goal, even as we were talking to Mitchell last week about his story. And I think it's important that we get all these, as many of these stories as we can. Frank, here's a text for you. Texter says to you, "Well done, shipmate. You make this old GMG proud to be squidly." And then he says a really bad word about us bubbleheads. So you've got at least one fan out there.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll bet I can. There aren't 10 people in California that can say they sailed an aircraft carrier on Lake Michigan.
That's probably true.
But I did.
On the Hancock, or you took one of the trainees?
What it was, they wanted to train pilots to make carrier landings. And they trained the pilots at Glenview, Illinois. And they still needed a place for them to make carrier landings. So they took two old passenger cruise ships that burned coal and were pedal wheelers.
Yeah, I've seen the pictures. They're amazing.
And they decked them over and made carriers out of them.
Used them to land aircraft carriers.
No hangars. Nope. No repair facilities. And I sailed on the Sable for one long, long cold December.
I imagine it was. We got to get going here. We got to take a break. It's the top of the hour. We're talking with Frank and Larry. Again, you want to ask them a question? 565-DAVE, 565-3283. Stay with us, Fox News, and get you up to date. And then we're back right here on Afternoons Live with Dave and John.